number of collaborations, many with people in this room, although in fact most of what I'll be talking about today is from an upcoming paper with two people who aren't in the room, Jerry Ostreicher and Alexei McLennan. Just to give motivation for what we're doing, we want to make predictions for the SC effect. And the way we'll do it is start with a large volume n-body simulation, so pure dark matter. And in each step of the simulation, we save the mass in a thin shell at the appropriate redshift, do this step after step, and build up, like layers in an onion, the light the mass distribution along the past light cone. So then we can go into our light cone and pull out each cluster in turn, and we'll add gas into that dark matter potential that we found in that cluster. And this is this is what my whole talk will be about, is that step. How do we figure out the gas distribution just from the potential, and can we do that in a way that our model clusters actually look like real clusters? Once we've done that, we can then put that cluster back into our light cone with the gas, repeat this for all the clusters, and voila, we have an SC map. So how to fill the dark matter potential with gas? We'll make two basic assumptions, hydrostatic equilibrium and a polytropic equation of state. So we define a polytropic variable, which just depends on the potential phi, or actually its difference from the central potential, phi naught. And that gives the full three-dimensional distribution of pressure and density, except that we have two free parameters here, the central pressure and the central density. And so we need two equations of constraint to fix those two parameters. Just parenthetically, if you had an analytic expression for your potential, you can then write down an analytic expression for your pressure and density as well. But that assumes generally a spherical potential. And using an n-body simulation like this, we're using the triaxiality and substructure and correlations between halos. So what are the two equations of constraint we'll use to set these two free parameters? They're basically matching the surface pressure and conservation of energy. So what we'll assume is that initially gas followed dark matter. So not only does the gas density follow the dark matter, but the gas had the same kinetic energy per unit mass as the dark matter. So that sets the initial surface pressure at the virial radius, and it gives the initial energy. And then from that initial state, the gas rearranges itself into this hydrostatic and polytropic equation of state. And so what we require is that in this final state, the surface pressure matches the initial surface pressure, and the final energy equals the initial energy. But there's one thing we have to keep in mind, which is because there's a surface pressure term, there's presumably gas falling in on the cluster. We have to match that surface pressure. But if it's the gas can be either have expanded beyond our virial or contracted, so there's mechanical work being done. And we have to keep into account this PDV work when we compute the final state. So these two equations will then give us will constrain the central pressure and density, and we then have the ICM distribution. Now, it'll come as no surprise, probably, that this doesn't actually work very well, this simple case. So what's shown here is temperature as a function of mass on the left, and then the gas fraction normalized to the WMAP5 cosmic mean, also as a function of mass. So what I'll be showing is a low redshift sample, so we'll take all the halos inside with a redshift less than 0.2 from our light cone. And so at the high mass end, individual halos will be shown as points, so the circles there. Once there get to be too many points, they're all smeared together. I just showed the median value at a given mass, and the hatched regions there enclose 68% of the clusters at that mass. So if you went out to the virial radius, it would be at the cosmic mean, basically. This is now measuring at R500. So, and the concentration is varying as you go to different masses.
It's usually the other way around, that gas is pushed out, so R500 is lower than.
Well, eventually, well, yeah, well, we'll get there.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're to compare, I'll look at two samples. One from Viklinen et al. These are relaxed, large relaxed clusters observed with Chandra, and the other from Sun et al., the blue points, which are nearby groups, also observed with Chandra. And you can see the observed clusters look nothing like the simple model I put forward. Basically, something we have to consider changes to the gas energy. This has been known for a long time. So two obvious changes that I haven't considered are star formation and feedback.
Your model mesh actually non-radiative simulations?
No. Glad you asked. let's go ahead. If I look at gas fraction inside R200, the simple model is this upper line. The gas fraction is the cosmic mean. That's not what you see in simulations. So here's Crane et al. They just did a large hydro simulation, no star formation, radiation feedback. And they calculate the gas fraction inside R200, again, normalized to cosmic mean. So that's the dotted line there. And so going mass from 10 to the 13 to 10 to the 15, each dot there is just a different cluster. And then the red is binning them. And you can see pretty much independent of mass, this is redshift 0 and redshift 1. At redshift 1, you get about 92 or 93% of the cosmic mean. And again, this is without feedback, star formation, radiation, radiative cooling, or anything like that.
Is the SPH simulation store?
Yeah, I think this is a gadget. But other simulations get the same result.
I'm also confused. Could you go back to the prediction from the simple model for the gas fraction? You said that it's pretty much unity. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So this is for mass within the aerobics. Right? So mass within the aerobics.
This is gas, the gas fraction inside R200.
That's right, it's the integrated quality.
Yeah.
But because gas has a core and dark matter doesn't, by definition, gas should contain less mass than the dark matter because you're integrating the mass outward to the virial radius. Even at the virial radius, you actually get lower gas mass than dark matter. And it's typically so I don't know why you're.
Well, I'm getting, that's the median value. I'm getting a spread. Because of the different clusters at the same mass can have different energies because I'm extracting them from a dark matter simulation. So I think if I took some theoretical expectation of what that energy should be, I probably would get something a little below.
But wasn't he just asking something about the stars? I mean, given that there are some fraction of stars in the galaxy?
We'll get to stars later. Just to mention this other plot, this is from McCarthy et al. What they did is simply take two clusters and let them merge in a non-radiative hydro simulation. And what's plotted here as a function of time is the total dark matter energy divided by the initial value. And so they've got equal mass mergers, 3-to-1 and 10-to-1 mergers. And you can see even a 10-to-1 merger, this ratio, once the clusters have merged, it has increased by 2 or 3%. The different colors there are just different impact parameters. And this should be fairly common. There should be a couple 10-to-1 mergers per unit redshift interval. And so since the denominator here is negative, what's happening is the dark matter is losing energy to the gas. And that the result of that is what we see here. The gas with higher energy is expanding and the gas fraction is dropping, just purely from dynamics.
Sorry, I don't understand that. The energy of dark matter is increasing.
It's the ratio. The initial binding energy is negative. Ah. It's bound. So the denominator there is negative. Ah. It becomes more bound and the ratio rises. So to sort of mock this effect, we will add in a term proportional to the energy of the dark matter. So if we add in 5%, basically, or 10% in the purple, basically all clusters are affected equally, and the gas fraction drops. So to get something that looks like the hydro simulations, we need to take in about 5% of the dark matter energy. So that's the first change. If we go back to compare this to observed clusters, so that was our initial model, and this line is now including that extra term, dynamical energy term. So the next thing that I'd ignored previously was star formation. This has two effects on the gas fraction. First, of course, just taking gas out and putting it into stars lowers the gas fraction directly. But also, the gas that goes into stars is the stuff with the shortest cooling time, that is the lowest entropy. So once you've taken out all the stuff with the lowest entropy, what's left behind has a higher average entropy than what you started with. So that it will be more puffed out than it would have been otherwise as well. So both of these effects are important. This was pointed out by Boyd and Bryan. So if I just take for all the clusters, take 9% of the gas and turn it into stars, what happens to the gas fraction is we go from this middle line to the lower line. And you can see the change is more than 9% because of the second effect. And you can see now at the high mass end, we're getting gas fractions that look reasonably close to what's observed. However, everything I've done so far is has been scale-free, and you can see the observed clusters aren't. So we need to break this scale-free behavior in some manner. And there are two ways of doing that, either varying the efficiency of star formation with cluster mass, or by adding in feedback. So let's consider the first option, varying star formation efficiency. So here's a plot from a recent paper by Giardini et al. It's the fraction in stars inside R500 as a function of mass, cluster mass. And you can see there's a definite trend there. Lower mass clusters have higher stellar fractions. And you can fit a power law relation to that. So the stellar fraction goes as m to the minus alpha star. the open squares on this plot at the Hymas end are from Lindmore and Stanford, and they get an alpha star of 0.26. I think Dennis will be talking about, perhaps touching on this later. This Gonzalez et al. Differed from the Lin in that they included the cost of light, and they ended up with a steeper relation, alpha star 0.64. So we'll consider these two extremes. And what that does to the gas fraction. So here, again, is our initial model, adding in the dynamical energy term. And then if we use the Lin et al. Star formation, we get that middle red line. If we instead use the Gonzalez et al., we get the lower red line there. And that pretty much brackets the observed stellar fractions. If we just take the Lin et al. And allow the exponent to vary, we come up with something in the middle, the white line there. And you can see we're one thing is we're not getting the scatter that's observed, but otherwise we get pretty much the right run of gas fraction as a function of mass. So that's one way of reproducing the right gas fractions. The other is way to break the scale-free behavior is to add in feedback. This would be from AGN, say, or supernova. So just to give a very hand-wavy estimate of how much energy we're talking about, if you turn 9% of the gas into stars, and there's 10 to the 51 ergs per quark supernova, you get a little less than half a keV per particle in your cluster. If you say 10% of the black hole energy is released when they're formed, and 20% of that 10% ends up thermalizing the gas, and your total black hole mass is 10 to the minus 3 of your stellar mass, then you're talking about roughly 1 keV per particle. So we'll add one final twist to our energy balance equation, which is to add in an epsilon times the stellar rest mass. So again, here's our original model, adding in the dynamical energy term, then just converting 9% of the gas into stars for all the clusters. And then we'll start increasing this epsilon f. And what happens is at the high mass end, the added energy is small compared to the binding energy of the cluster, so not much happens. But at the low mass end, there is, in fact, the energy you're adding is, in fact, pretty significant compared to that binding energy, so the gas expands and the gas fraction drops. So this would be a little more than a third of a keV, and this would be a couple of keV per particle being added. And again, if you take this 9% star formation and add in about 1 keV per particle of feedback, that also gives a reasonable run of gas fraction versus mass. So I've presented sort of two.
So don't you worry that at the high mass end you are missing?
Yeah, I could vary this by not using less than 9%. But yeah, anyway, this model is based on the optical data is wrong. We know not every cluster has exactly the same gas, same stellar fraction. So this is more just to show that here's another way of breaking the scale-free behavior. So I've shown two models that work. So if we plot them on this sort of alpha star, the the slope of the stellar fraction versus feedback. The first model I showed had no feedback, but a high alpha star, and the second one had alpha star of zero, but a high feedback. And if you imagine, so these two parameters are degenerate. If you imagine sort of the allowed region, it would run parallel. It would run diagonally across this plane. And based solely on just the gas, it would be hard to tell these apart, actually. So this one is pretty much disallowed because of the observed stellar fractions. But anything between the Lindmore and Stanford alpha star up to something higher, as once we've adjusted the feedback epsilon to match X-ray data, the models are actually pretty hard to tell apart.
So does this get added globally?
Yes. Yeah. There's no history here or
no profile.
No. Yeah. Right. It's just added in. We're just matching the initial and final energy of the gas that was originally inside the virial radius.
So you have, if a bunch of stars are forming right at the center, then you're raising the energy of stuff out of the virial radius as well.
Yeah. So we'll select what we'll call a standard model. This is what I'll show for the rest of the talk. It's the Lin et al. Star formation efficiency with a small amount of feedback, a third of a kV per particle. But anything in between these two models would look pretty much similar and would be hard just looking at the gas to tell apart.
Wouldn't you want to scale the star formation profile to the nebulosity profile?
The energy isn't input in any particular place. I'm just matching the global value. I don't know that there's a way of doing that.
That would sort of probably impact the global asset scaling relation, right? Because then you sort of, at least the smaller systems, you have out the gas a little more. So that means, I guess, the total, the total thermal energy with the virulators is probably not something that you would have in a true cluster that has actually localized energy sources.
That could be. I'll show some profiles later. For higher mass systems, it works pretty well. Well, I'll show this later. This is just to show the purple line here is the best fit power law MKT relation from Bicklin et al. And our standard model. This is the fractional difference from that best fit power law, just to show we're getting the right MKT as well. So maybe this gets at your question. Here's a plot of on the left-hand side from Sun et al. Again, they're the Sun et al. Groups, and then these clusters are from Bicklin et al. And they're as a function of temperature, they're giving the entropy. Again, entropy in quotes, defined in this way. And so at 3 radii, R500, 1000, and 2500, they're determining the entropy at those 3 radii and give a best fit power law as the solid line. So on the right-hand plot, I reproduce those 3 best fit power laws in the purple lines and compare that to our model, again, as a function of temperature. And you can see at high temperature, above KT of 4 kV or so, the match is actually pretty good. At the low mass end or low T end, in the inner radii near the core, we're getting our model is about 20% below that best fit value. And so this may be a consequence of what we've already heard today about various complications happening in the core. Again, I'm not, there's no history in my in our model. It's we're just matching the global quantities. So here are a couple of comparisons to SC data. So the left-hand plot is the pressure profile. So for all the clusters above 3 keV, the solid line is the mean pressure profile. These dashed lines just show the maximum extent of the variation of all the clusters that went in to make up that, that mean line. Now, there's a blue dotted line there, which is the our original model before we put in any feedback or star formation. And you can see in the outskirts above R500 or so, there's actually very little change in that mean profile from all of these inputs that we've added.
You want me to turn down the lights? Because
can you, if you like, yeah.
You can always just ask the.
Yeah, that blue color is probably. There's a dotted blue line that goes there, and then actually it ends up following that. See? That dashed line. Oh well. And the points here are from F. Shorty et al. They stacked WMAP data and fit a mean parametric, fit a parametric model to that stacked data to get a mean profile. As far as this inner point goes, they assumed that inside that point, the profile was R to the minus 2. We're getting something shallower than that. So I think if they had assumed a shallower inner profile, this point would be higher and in better agreement with what with our model. The right-hand plot is the Compton Y parameter inside R2500. So we're just projecting each cluster individually. There's no foregrounds or backgrounds as a function of the gas mass inside R2500. The points here are from Bonamente et al. And the purple line there, I've taken their best fit power law to their low redshift data and extended it way beyond where their data is, just to show that we get a very similar slope. Basically, within the error is the same slope in the relation there. And hopefully this time you can see the blue dotted line, that's the original model. So again, that's just to emphasize normalizing to the X-ray data made a big difference there. One consequence of this model is that the gas has expanded because we put in all this energy. And so the gas originally for higher mass clusters, everything above 3 keV. The gas originally at R virial has expanded out to 1.2 times R virial on average. So further in, the gas fraction is below the cosmic mean. So here's the star formation we put in, just the Lin et al. Star formation. And then the gas fraction, and you sum those two for the baryon fraction, and this tops out at the high mass end at 80%. And changing the star formation, since stars are such a small fraction at high masses, that won't really affect this result at the high mass end. It could vary at the low mass end. If we increase star formation, we would reduce feedback to get more or less the same gas fraction, and so this line would become more horizontal. And just to go back to our original motivation was to make maps, and now we can do that, and that's that's all I'll say about it. And if you want to hear more, come see Halima Segal's talk later in the week. So how am I for time? Okay, so just to add one more complication, there could be non-thermal pressure support, for example, cosmic rays. So if we assume that the non-thermal support is directly proportional to the gas pressure everywhere, such that we can write the total pressure as just 1 plus delta times the gas pressure, then our polytropic variable has just an extra term in it there. We need to keep into account the energy in this relativistic component. But once that's done, it's more or less the same process as before. So what effect would this have on the gas fraction? If we take our original model, which is the white line in the middle there, and add in 10% non-thermal pressure support, it moves to where the green line is. Since you don't need the same amount of pressure to hold the gas up, it has this extra help, it can be cooler and correspondingly denser. So, and that increases the gas fraction at all masses. So, recalling of the first thing we did was to add in energy proportional to the dark matter, that had the precise opposite effect of what adding in this delta rel has. So if all we have to do is increase that dynamical energy term, and we can bring our model back into agreement with the data. And one thing here, since the mass and the data points was derived assuming no non-thermal pressure, they all have to be shifted by delta rel, by the factor of delta rel, 1 plus delta rel, to higher masses as well. And so just to show a plot I showed earlier, the Compton Y inside R2500, I've now added on top this model of non-thermal pressure support, but added dynamical energy. What you can see is it looks pretty much the same as the original model without that non-thermal pressure support. So going from temperature or pressure to gas mass will still work once you normalize to X-ray clusters, but of course going from then temperature or gas mass to total mass, that will be different. So, I'll just put up the conclusions. The main conclusion is, of course, you want your model clusters to look like real ones, so it's important to normalize off other data, X-ray data. But the good news is once you've taken into account all the processes, you can actually do this in a fairly simple way. So I guess I'm saying instead of that clusters are complicated, I'm saying on the whole, they're actually fairly simple. There might be stuff going on in the core, but you can get fairly close. We understand the gross energetics of the clusters pretty well. Thanks.
So this was on the slide you sort of flashed by, so you might just be referring me to the other talk, but do you have power spectra? Obviously you do, and how do they compare it to other things out there like Neptune and Sagittarius?
So the top line here is the original model without star formation or feedback. And once you include it, you drop down to the lower blue line there. And the white line there is Komatsu and Seljak. And so actually Komatsu and Seljak works pretty well. They get slightly shallower temperature profiles than I do, but the pressure profile actually looks pretty similar. There's a lot, I get more scatter. So it's hard to say on a cluster by cluster basis.
And this is all
but it works on average pretty well, actually.
This is for sigma 8 of 0.8 or so.
Right. It's a WMAT 5 model.
And the lower the yellow line is the.
That's the kinetic, right.
I've got a related question. So you have gamma, orthotropic gamma, right?
Right.
How did you determine that?
I just set it to 1.2.
Ah, okay. So that probably explains it, because in Komatsu and Seljak, it's 1.1 for those mass and clusters. That's shallow. So
right.
It's a slight difference, but that might be enough to explain. Mm-hmm.
So, you claim that clusters are simple, but you actually didn't manage to match the scatter.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't. Yeah, that's one thing I haven't done. So I would probably want to match the scatter in the stellar fraction, for example,
and
see how that works.
And X-ray, I assume. I mean, you have much less scatter in X-ray, probably.
Right. I wouldn't, I don't know about trusting X-rays as something to match, because the scatter is so huge, precisely because of merging or whatever will drastically change things.
So you're reproducing the Ashorty et al. Profile of the stacked WMAT clusters in absolute as well as shape, right?
Yeah.
So where is Nash's missing thermal energy?
Well, okay. So say you have an empty well, and you drop in like a rubber ball. It'll bounce up to where you dropped it from. So now you drop in a second one. It hits the first one coming up and gets ejected out. So now you've lost half your mass and you have a lower energy. That second ball is now stuck inside the well. So it's been carried off out of the cluster.
As of the very other ideas.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So just to follow up. So you're saying that, you know, Nash was expected.
Pardon?
It's modelable, and if you've done this all before, you would have predicted that.
Yeah.
You look at another smaller cluster, you would have predicted that.
Correct.
What about the effects of turbulence in the clusters? Is it easy to introduce that into your model?
I would include that in with a non-thermal pressure support, I guess. Other than that, I'm not sure how to do it.
Right. It might be a function of radius as well.
So. Right, yeah. That would be an extra complication, yeah.
It's a kind of doubt because I am not working. I'm trying to clarify myself from the detection of the first bullet process, which one of them seems to appear without matter, no, almost without matter. Surely there have been measured other always also empty clusters or not.
Well, I'm assuming hydrostatic equilibrium, so I can't really model what's going on in something like a bullet where there's
a lot of fire. No, a more elementary question. It's not related with perhaps your work. It's a kind of general question.
Uh-huh.
There have people detected other few clusters with having almost no matter or not? Only one bullet cluster have been detected, or you have a lot of measures?
You mean sort of dark clusters?
Yes, clusters.
Yeah, I'm not aware of, but the way you'd see them is with lensing, And I'm not aware, maybe someone can contradict me, that, that such a thing has been seen.
There have been a couple of planes that have evaporated with deep energy.
A Google measurement that they have not mapped.
In wide area weak lensing surveys, there was a hint of high sigma peak that then went away once people did deeper imaging with deep lensing. So far there's no.
No evidence. But in these two cases, at least, or three cases, the size of the of this cluster are very different or similar?
I don't recall. I think they were all fairly massive clusters. Or claiming would have been
that. Thank you. So I have one question. So you didn't try to compare the pressure profiles with X-ray pressure, or actually luminosity profile, just the actual profile.
The X-ray profiles.
Yeah.
No.
Why not?
There's just so much scatter in X-ray and okay. Alexei Nicklin and. We sort of resist using X-rays as X-ray luminosity as a fundamental parameter.
Oh.
He just thought it was too variable to use.
So what about entropy profiles? If you compare these,
beyond
they're much better.
Right, beyond looking at specific radii, that one plot I showed, I had. Again, there's like a fair amount of variation from cluster to cluster. But I should say all my clusters are non-cooling core. They all the temperature and keeps rising all the way to the core.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, thanks again.